Southern trees bear a strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Movie Bomb. Today we are going to be reviewing The United States versus Billie Holiday. If you don't know Billie Holiday, she's iconic, and I think her story is lost. It's archaic. And we know people like Frank Sinatra, and even though Ella Fitzgerald, and we might know Bing Crosby and those guys, Billie Holiday's story just gets brushed under a rug, I think.
Doesn't that kind of go to like the systemic racism talk? Like people think that there's no racism, but like there's all these stories that we don't know.
You know, it's funny you say that. I love when we do these topics that has to do with race and culture, because people have asked me, well, you know, if you can do it, why can't people in your hood do it? And I said, I was educated, non-threatening Black man. I said, I'm going to win every time. I say, but there are some people who aren't non-threatening. There are some people who won't do the dance. They don't play the game, and you're not going to hear of them, you know? So when you think of people that she were contemporaries with, like Bessie Smith, we talked about, you know, Ma Rainey, you know.
They were before her, though.
Yeah, I know they were before her. Yeah. But if you remember in the movie, she asked, why can't you just behave and be like the other, you know, singers?
Right.
He's like, that's just not who I am. I mean, I grew up in a whorehouse, for God's sake. You know,
right. That's the right
difference. But yeah, so like I said, I really, even though I'm very aware, I'm very conscious of the Black community where I grew up. It's horrible. It's Detroit, Chicago, Philly, same place, Washington, D.C. But it just kills me when people say, how did you make it out? I said, I grew up in a different way. You know what I mean? So let me jump to the storyline. There's a couple of story plots here. You know, one of the storylines is we follow Billie Holiday during her career as she is targeted by the Federal Department of Narcotics with an undercover sting operation led by a Black federal agent, Jimmy Fletcher, with whom she had a tumultuous affair. That's one storyline. In the 1940s, Billie Holiday is targeted by the government in an effort to radicalize the war on drugs, ultimately aiming to stop her from singing the controversial song Strange Fruit. Had you guys heard Strange Fruit prior to the movie?
I had never heard of that song. Like, it's this goes to like, you know, like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah. One of her most popular songs. I didn't hear the song until I was in my 40s. Right. So it was like, oh my, someone said, had you ever heard Strange Fruit? And I listened to the song and it was like bone chilling. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I was
no
like,
kidding. No kidding.
Like, you know, and then I had saw something on BET or some network where they had put the song to pictures, old pictures and stuff like that. So, and it was really chilling. They showed like lit people being lynched, burned at the stake, you know, crowds of white people cheering, all kinds of stuff like that. So it was interesting, but I was a grown man. So it was a dark song.
Dark song. Yeah, it's, you're right. It is chilling. You asked, had I ever heard it? I find it interesting that, so in college, I was turned on to Billie Holiday and, you know, bought some of her albums and things like that. And her voice is, you're right, Chris, she's iconic. It's also such a specific voice. Mm-hmm. The feel like, but looking back, I don't think any of my albums had Strange Fruit on it. And I had at least a couple like greatest hits, right?
Yeah.
Didn't have Strange Fruit on it.
Huh? That's not surprising.
Based on what we're seeing in this movie, you're right. It's not surprising, but it is surprising to me. It's shocking to me.
In 1958, Frank Sinatra, this is 1958, mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra said, and I quote, Billie Holiday was and still remains the greatest single musical influence on me and my music, and is unquestionably the most important influence on American popular singing in the last 20 years. And that's Frank Sinatra talking. Mm-hmm. And then I started to listen to and I started to listen, but I heard, I think of Frank Sinatra's songs.
Right.
Like, wow, it does have like a Billie Holiday feel to a lot of it, you know?
I think it's her, she had really interesting phrasing.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that, yes.
You know,
yeah.
Just different. And, you know, the timbre of her voice and sort of that sort of raspy thing, but it's the phrasing, the way she just sort of bends the lyrics around the music. It right. just is really interesting. And I think Sinatra, to your point, can do that as well, can just find the right spot to hit something or whatever. It just,
it's almost their voice is an instrument.
It is.
And it is. It's because when you listen to the trumpet section or the drum section, their voice on top of that is almost like another instrument. Like regardless of what they're saying, mm-hmm. it's just melodic and it goes along with the rest of the music.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It is truly intertwined. And she could, you see it in this movie. There are moments where there's no music and she, like, obviously your voice is music, but still, like, she is creating something, a feel that goes beyond just the sound of her voice. So, you know, those things are awesome.
Did you have like an overall lying thought process as you were watching this movie? Yes, it dealt with several topics. It dealt with racism. It dealt with this the culture of music in the 40s and 30s. But I kept thinking about how important music was at certain times in our society.
I think part of that is that it's like society is divided. I think music is divided right now. There's not like a common, I don't know how to explain it. Like in the audiences, there were people from all groups in her audiences.
Right.
And I don't think you would go to certain concerts today and you would see that.
You know, I think about artists today. Artists today make statements, but back then they made music that made statements. You know, right. during the era of Trumpism, he had artists like, you know, Kid Rock, and what's the other country singer? Was it not Waylon Jennings? Was it Waylon Jennings? I can't remember. No. But he had artists. He had certain artists that supported him openly, but they tweeted and they said things, but they didn't make music where people was like, wow, that's deep. That's a song supporting Trump. If you really listen closely to the lyrics, subliminally, it's talking about right-wing culture. Like, you just don't see music like that today, where Blacks had to make music. She never mentions lynching in Strange Fruit.
No, she doesn't.
The writer, Abel Maripol, he was a Jewish guy. He never...
It was a poem, right? Originally?
And in the poem, I read the poem even this morning, the poem never mentions lynching. The poem never mentions Black people. It talks about Black bodies, but it doesn't talk about people. And it's odd that that song was such a threat to the government.
So, by the way, you mentioned the 30s. This all happens in the 40s, because it covers the last 12 years of her life is something that I read. You know, so we're going to ramp into the Cold War throughout this. Right. And so this is the time when government and the FBI and others are like, the Red Scare and Joseph McCarthy and all this stuff's going on in the same window. So there is a paranoia.
Yeah.
And we're going to end up in the spot where the civil rights fight is happening after this time period. But we know that there's a ramp up to that. And so this is an ember that starts the fire, right?
Yeah, and there's certain things that he said that was said in the movie. And one that hit me was that, in so many ways, I can't remember the exact quote, was that basically Blacks and drugs are gonna be the downfall of our country.
Say that again. I'm sorry. I missed that.
I can't remember the exact word, but I think it was Anslinger who said that blacks and drugs will be the downfall of our country.
How about him getting like a thank you award from Kennedy
at the end, right? Like that blows me away because everybody thinks like, oh, the Kennedys, they're like so like civil rights conscious and they did so much and then here he is like shaking the guy's hand and putting him an award. It's like what?
There's two sides to that. Like that hits home after watching this movie, right? But at the same time. Yeah. If we look at government or whatever, this guy's job was, you know, he spent a career fighting a war against drugs, which we all can be like, look, the war against drugs is all screwed up. But the idea of it isn't necessarily wrong. Like, we want to prevent people. So, you know, like, I don't know.
It's like prohibition. The guy was in charge of prohibition too. Like, it doesn't work. Right. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Chris, I mentioned this to you and I'm going to mention this to anybody who's listening. You got to watch Amend on Netflix.
I already started.
Yeah. It's really good. I think just the way.
Is it a movie or a series?
It's a series. Yeah, it's a 5-part series about the 14th Amendment and its effect on race, civil rights movement. It moves into the equal rights movement for women as well. And it's well done. And you see how all these things happen over time. And it's probably the most important amendment. They say that. Anyway, we're getting off topic. You should watch it.
Yeah, but what kills me about the whole Constitution in general is that the 14th Amendment basically is a promise to citizenship. What promises we make to citizenship. And I thought, but we weren't considered citizens at the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't for me. And for many, 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 many years, people tried to make sure that the Constitution didn't apply to blacks and minorities.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's safe to say that it didn't even apply to women. It was men.
Right. It's almost like the framers, they almost made a mistake.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like
they overstated.
Yeah. You know,
like, did we say that all men are created equal? Well, we actually meant all men. Yeah. Or how about we meant everybody who's in this room?
Right.
Well, and I think you can argue that it's they didn't consider other people. You know, absolutely. They didn't consider Native Americans or blacks to, or you know, they're not men. They're not the same as I am.
So let's
jump. I'm saying men, I mean me. People like me.
Yeah, exactly. Let's jump into this
white movie. Educated men who own property.
Exactly.
So this movie was directed by Lee Daniels. Lee Daniels also did The Butler. Now, have you seen The Butler?
I have not.
Highly recommend you watch that. The Butler, now, Lee Daniels is deep. So The Butler is about a guy, I can't remember the administration, but he worked in the White House for probably 50 years.
Wait a minute, I have seen The Butler.
Yeah, and he talks about the history of the butlers and this butler in the White House for all these decades and all these presidents. And it was such a good movie, but it was by how the butlers were, Oprah played in it actually.
Right.
But it was about how the butlers were treated. And it's a movie, not a documentary. But it was a really good movie to see the evolution of the butler. And when I'm reading Obama's book, A Promised Land, and he started talking about how when he came into White House, everybody was black, like all the servants and staff and help, which means all these presidents up to Obama still just accepted the normal status quo, black maids, black butlers, people shining their shoes. And they were like, him and Michelle, like, whoa, whoa. First of all, we're changing the title. You're no longer butlers and maids. All right, that's one thing. You're not gonna be called the help. They gave them different titles. They went about different hiring practices. They had inclusion about what they you know, anything that they wanted to say or feel or do. They called them chefs, not just cooks. Like, mm-hmm. it was just, they just changed the whole mentality of the White House and the whole, you know, butlership. So that's Lee Daniels. He'd make some really good movies. Highly recommend you watch that. The players in this is Andra Day, who played this Billie Holiday.
She was good.
Yeah, she was great.
And her voice, you're like, oh, okay, you do Billie Holiday. Like, that's dead on, you know?
She won a Golden Globe, and she's being nominated for an Oscar as well.
Okay.
Ironically, Diana Ross played Billie Holiday in Lady Sings the Blues in 1972, also was nominated for an Oscar and a Golden Globe.
All right.
So you do that role, you might make some waves, you know?
There you go. There you go.
There was a Reginald Lord Devine, which was the transgender.
Right. Yeah. The interviewer.
I don't know. Was that based on a real person?
I don't know the answer to that. I'll look it up while we're talking.
Susan, have you ever heard of Reginald Lord Devine? Neither. strange person though.
Very Lula strange.
Bankhead, which was her, her love interest, which was the female. Natasha Lyon. I haven't seen Natasha Lyon in so long. She used to play in a lot of the...
she was in the American Pie movies.
American Pie movies, right. So she looked good. So what I wanted to talk about was 1972, Lady Sings the Blues came out. That was a Berry Gordy production from Motown fame. And Billy D. Williams played Louis McKay. So in this movie, United States versus Billie Holiday, he was kind of an abusive figure, slapped her around, married her, tried to take over her money, the whole nine, came to her hospital bed on her dying days and said, you need to sign this document.
Right.
But in Lady Sings the Blues, they made Louis McKay a very amiable figure. He was the love interest. Women swooned over him. Hence why they used Billy D. Williams, because he was handsome.
Right.
And so Berry Gordy totally changed that role. And I was wondering, which one was the real Louis McKay? Was he the loving, amiable guy who cared about women and loved his woman? Or was he the wife beater who slapped her around and tried to give her drugs? Like, I don't know which is which.
It was probably both.
It could have been both, right? So what was interesting was I read that Berry Gordy, Lady Sings the Blues, that came out in 72, was based on her autobiography. Hence why it was, if you're telling your own story, you're not going to
tell it. Yeah, you're not going to.
Right?
Plus, I feel like, too, like back then, movies and media were different. You didn't talk about those things so much.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was not acceptable to talk about things like that.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Or so graphically. It would never have been that graphic.
Correct, yeah. And she was an icon. So we're not going to do a takedown.
Right, you didn't want to ruin that either, right? Yeah.
Yep.
You know what was interesting was he, remember he sat on the hospital bed and he goes, come on, baby, I need you to sign these papers. And... Mm-hmm. For the average watcher, we might have just thought they were just divorce papers. But not only were they divorce papers, they were signing over her entire estate to him.
Yep.
All of her royalties.
Mm-hmm.
He made millions of dollars off her royalties. Fortunately and unfortunately, she didn't make a lot of money. She died with 70 cents to her name outside of her estate. Right?
Yeah.
That's all she, I mean, they said she had $1,000 in cash that was in her purse at the time. And like 70 cents that she could call her own, because the $1,000 was to pay her staff or people or something like that. So she had no money. Something else I read was that even as late as 2014, her estate was only worth $14 million. That's nothing. When you had a career like she did, like, what do you think Frank Sinatra's estate is worth?
I have no idea. A lot.
Right.
A lot of money.
But I think he's unusual. I think a lot of artists get exploited and don't have.
Well, that's what I mean.
Much, you know,
James Brown estate. He didn't have a lot of cash assets, but even his estate was worth quite a big, you know, pretty penny. She made 12 LPs,
right?
And then all of the video footage and stuff like that.
Right, but I don't think that so Sinatra and even James Brown and some of these others, mm-hmm. Think of how many posters and videos.
The merch.
Exactly. Billie Holiday doesn't have that.
No.
You know, plus it's sad, but, you know, jazz is jazz is a very it's almost siloed. Like I don't think that it has a broad popularity like it once did. Mm-hmm. And so that's some of that's lost, you know, like it. And so Billie Holiday, we don't have the merch for her.
Right.
Most people, if you slapped up a picture of Billie Holiday, I think that 80% of the public or more, probably more like 90% would be like, I have no idea who that is.
But I think the entire Black community would know.
All right. That's really, do you think the entire?
If I go to a certain age group, I think if you're 30 or more, higher, you have to.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that. But under 30, I don't think that
right.
would be the case.
I grew up, I learned about her as young as 6 or 7 years old. My parents listened to her.
Right.
So, and I remember 1972, I was only like 8 years old, and Lady Sings the Blues came out, and that was a huge movie.
Right. Yeah.
In the southern
your point about the, like, I get your point about the her estate. It's crazy. Is that somehow part of the public domain, like some of her music then? Like I'm trying to figure out why.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. Another thing that I mentioned is when Berry Gordy wanted to write Lady Sings the Blues, he had to go to Louis McKay for the rights.
All right.
And Louis McKay made himself the creative director of the movie. So he made himself a prince in this movie. Like, gotcha. Oh, well, if you're going to do a movie about me and Billy, I got to be a prince. I got to be the saving grace in this.
So I probably.
Right. So that answers the question as to why the different trail, right?
Exactly.
And I agree with you, Susan. And it makes me believe that this portrayal is probably far more accurate than the other.
Exactly. I agree. Hey, I'm sorry.
I was going to say about to get sort of back to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this, like, I wanted to like this movie mm-hmm. more than I liked this movie.
That's understandable.
You know,
I liked it till I didn't.
No, it is that, I really like that. I like the topic, and there's so much, so much about it, but I felt like it was scattershot. Like, it didn't have like a, you even read two different explanations of the movie, right? It didn't have sort of a focus.
Like that's more of like an editing issue, or is that more of like it was just flawed script?
I think it was a flawed script. I think it was I didn't think it was a great movie. I thought it had great performances.
I agree.
But it wasn't a great movie by any stretch. I found myself getting bored at times. I was like, okay, same
old. My husband was very bored with it.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, like.
We get it.
Right. Yeah. It's just sort of like, we're going to tell this story for a little while. Now we're going to jump over to this story. And then we're going to be here. And it never quite.
No.
I don't know.
I didn't think it was a great movie. It's not something I would watch again. It's not a rewatchable.
Right.
But I did think it had great performances. And I think for people, young people who don't know Billie Holiday, I think it was a good elementary lesson here. Learn something about Billie Holiday, the good and the bad. Now go dig deeper and find out more about her and listen to her music, because I thought it was a way to pay tribute to her.
I agree.
I think it was a way to show how our government can be snakes as we keep watching movie after movie after movie about our government being disappointing.
Yep.
Right.
Well, and it says something about, this is something I don't know. And I read something. I was like, okay, was the Federal Bureau of Narcotics part of the FBI?
Like, I think so. Jagger...
I think so. Yeah, okay. I think that so.
Wasn't that pre-FBI? There was no FBI yet, right?
No, there was FBI because he referred to Hoover.
Yeah.
He did. And Hoover's picture was on the wall. So I assumed it was part of the FBI. Mm-hmm. And J. Edgar Hoover had this paranoid approach to things. And, you know, he was a snake.
He was.
You
know?
He was a snake.
Well, when you talk about paranoia like that, I think that comes from being like he could see what other people would the links people would go to, because those are the links he would go to. And you always see things through your own lens, right? So I think he, anyway, we're getting off topic.
But the marionette piece of like, I want to get this song to not be played. So I'm going to take her down for drugs and other things like that.
We'll let her do her drugs as long as she doesn't sing the song. Yeah. Like, that's like so cynical, right? Like,
absolutely. But I think that he and the FBI did things that whole way along. You know, I think that.
Oh, they still do shit like that, right? Yeah.
And you know, the whole Joseph McCarthy Red Scare. They're behind that, going, "Yep, bring down as many people as you can." You know, stuff like that. So it's scary.
I want to quickly talk about the author of the poem Strange Fruit. Mm-hmm. His name was Abel Meeropol. Do you know the story of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg? They were spies. The movie the show The Americans is based on them, actually.
I love that show, by the way. I love that show.
Wasn't that great? Oh my god, yeah.
So finished the whole thing.
It's I watched it on regular TV. Like, I had it recorded. Okay. I didn't stream it. I discovered that one night, like, they were running ads for it. So I started watching it. And I said to Isha and a bunch of other people, I was like, this movie is really, really good. Or this show is really, really good.
I didn't, I didn't like the last season or two. I started to get bored. Right?
I agree. But early on, it's like, I'm rooting for the Russians. This is crazy.
It was crazy. So anyway, so...
Chris, I don't think it was based on the Rosenbergs. I think it was based on that ring of spies they broke up like in the 80s or 90s.
You're right. When I say based
embedded,
on that, right.
Like,
I read something about they kind of, they modeled their behaviors after him. I read something about that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because Julius and Ethel were... They were top notch, you know, spies. They were the real deal. I read that Abel actually adopted their children after they were executed for treason.
Really?
Yeah. And remember in the movie, he said, well, the guy who wrote the song was a communist.
I didn't catch that in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. When she said, why can't I sing the song? What's so wrong with this song? He said, well, one thing, the guy who wrote the song was a damn communist. So he did say that in the film. And so this guy was very, very close ties to Julius and Ethel. Of course, they were convicted of spying on behalf of the Soviet government. And they were executed for treason. And so Abel took their kids in and raised them.
Wow. Crazy.
Kind of interesting. There was a lot of layers to this this film. But you're right. I gave it about a 5.
Yeah.
5.5. Wasn't enough. Nothing special. I was disappointed. I was like, oh, this could have been so good. But I thought, what's going to happen is this. She's going to win. She won her Golden Globe. She's going to win her Oscar. And it's going to draw a lot of people to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's going to change the opinion of the quality of the movie.
Right. Yeah.
Let's just talk about some of the production, though, because there were good things about it.
Yes,
like the costumes were great. The sets were great. I love the way they did some of that like Super 8 film kind of thing.
Right.
Where they went and then they went from black and white to color, but it wasn't done cheesy. It was done really well. So there were good things about it. Right.
Yep.
Not only did they go black and white, but they made it look really old and
right with that Super 8 kind of like old film thing. Yeah,
it was a little bit yellowy, right?
Yeah.
Something you guys know, the little things that I like. She died of cirrhosis, right? in the hospital. Did you see how yellow her eyes were?
Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh my God.
I was like, oh my God, that's such good directing. Like, that's just a little thing that's like, all right, way to pay attention, you know? Wow, and they were definitely very yellow. Which I just, you know, that's just like a little piece. I'm like, all
it's
right,
a little job. Thing that you can believe in. Yes.
Yep. So,
so that in Lady Sings the Blues, she got her start by singing in a white band, an all white band. And that's, you know, one of the keys to that movie was a black woman touring with a white man, a white band. How's that going to go over? So that was kind of, you know, side note on Lady Sings the Blues. They didn't really portray that here in this movie,
no.
But she did get the white manager who Carnegie Hall, you know,
right.
That was kind of interesting.
Earlier, we were talking about, you know, she's playing in this massive hall, and you know, to mixed crowds, and you were talking about music being important, and there were messages in music and things like that. But in that day and age, I think that part of the reason that today's artists don't have as much opportunity is the dilution of our attention. Mm-hmm. So back in the 40s and 50s and, you know, and earlier, that people paid very close attention to certain things. And so we don't have people going to TV. So music has a whole different level of focus in the lives of people in society in general. So everybody's listening to Sinatra. Everybody's listening at that time to Billie Holiday. Right. And everybody knows these people. The Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown winners were huge, and boxers and things like that, because there were, these are icons in the community, in the country as a whole. And so there are different things that were popular then because they grabbed the national attention, because there wasn't as much to grab attention. Our kids forget about it. Like, my kids are, they watch 15-second videos on a constant loop. I'm like, what the heck's going on? You know?
So let me ask you a question. Is there, who are some of our 21st century icons?
So Muhammad Ali, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. That's 20th century, isn't it?
You're saying 21st century.
Who's alive today that's an icon in entertainment?
I'd say Beyonce.
Okay. See how we have to think about it?
Because again, it's diluted. There's so much stuff out there.
I mean, we're looking at Jay-Z and Beyonce as icons in music today.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
That's kind of interesting, right? Justin Bieber's up there.
Yeah, Bieber. But we have so much insight into their lives too, that they can.
Oh yeah, we can tweet them. They'll tweet us back.
Right, but they can. They'll also. They can get taken down so easily.
Oh, I know.
So Bieber, you know, shoots up in popularity and then becomes his own joke because we follow him around all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so I think those things are weird.
You know, art in general, art to performing arts, it's so different than it used to be. I mean, the artist's heyday is over. Like, there was a time you could say an artist's name, just their one name, like Basquiat, and everybody knew who you were talking about. You're like, I can't name an artist today who's iconic. Like, and the people that we do go see at, like, the Philadelphia Art Museum, we're still going to see, like, Dali exposés.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But so artists, performing arts, artists, all those people, we don't have that today. We don't have, like, Billie Holiday.
Well, I think it gets to the point where, like, everybody can live out their fantasy of being a star by, like, social media or whatever. Like, everybody thinks they're the star of their own reality show.
Oh, yeah. And I can
Like, you know, everybody's got GarageBand, or everybody can be a photographer, or everybody can make a movie, or, like, it just has lost its specialness.
Technology has made it so easy. I can make a beautiful painting with a graphic software on my computer.
In music,
exactly.
in music, MP3 players have taken the whole thing down because we don't do albums anymore.
No. I said that one of my Facebook posts recently was, remember we couldn't wait for the release date of our favorite artists? Like,
right, yeah. You know,
how about
we would say now, what month we're in, March, we would say, oh, Madonna's new album come out in June. I can't wait.
Right.
Well, and like, I was thinking about this, getting concert tickets. You'd go wait in line for concert tickets. Like, now
you don't have to do that anymore.
Them online, right?
You just refresh your browser.
How did we even know when they were, like, when to start to wait in line?
I know.
Now
the radio, you listen to the radio.
I gotcha. It's weird. And my kids, I don't think we have music icons because everybody gets their one song played, mm-hmm. and nobody has an album, so nobody can build a vibe. Like, we all had albums where it's like, okay, this album built a vibe. Like, this was where what the artist was going through at the time. So,
so
the whole album has a feel, and you don't have that anymore. They make individual songs.
Right.
Well, I think too, like, it goes back to, like, they don't do whole albums because, like, you can go on iTunes and buy a song for 99 cents. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, where's the incentive to actually sit down and think about an entire concept?
Yeah. Well, here's one of the things. They do still make albums, but they don't promote the album. They promote
maybe that's like that's more like.
And they don't even announce the release date of the album. They just come out.
Right. It's like movies going straight to Netflix, right? You know?
They don't say like, you find out afterwards, like, oh, Justin Bieber album came out last Thursday. Oh, really?
Right.
Like, it wasn't or anything.
Right.
Or so, like, I'm wondering too, like, with music, how much of this is going to go back to live events, like, after COVID? Like, do we need to have live concerts?
I hope so.
I hope so too, but, like, you know, is that really going to...
That industry is devastating. So I have some friends who are musicians and make their, you know, support their families as mm-hmm. musicians. And then some others who are, you know, like sound guys and so on and so forth. And that, like, it is shocking how much the pandemic has destroyed that industry.
Live Nation. I have people that were friends that work for Live Nation.
Yeah.
And they don't even know how to rebound from this. What do you do?
Right.
Like, they've already cut like half of their staff.
Yeah.
They had promoters and street people and all types of people that all they did with their jobs was promote concerts and promote concert tickets.
I think it will come back just because, you know, music, live music has a different feel than.
Yeah, and there's iconic venues too. I mean, we have SPAC here in Saratoga, and SPAC will always do well because it's outdoors and.
Right.
But there's places.
And they also have endowments. I'm more concerned about places like Cafe Lena and, you know, like that's.
But there's places like Red Rock in Colorado. Those places will always do well because it's an experience. Like, have you ever been to Red Rock? You know?
Yeah.
And you always think about, you know, Stevie Nicks live at Red Rock and all
that.
So people do the same thing at SPAC. I have friends who get the whole season. They live in Connecticut, but they come to almost every concert up here in Saratoga just to be
part. Right. That so I have a buddy who runs the Hilton in downtown Saratoga, and so he's got tickets, you know, season tickets to shows there. And so we've gone to a few. I don't think it's a good music venue.
It's
is it the spa, the outdoor amphitheater?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's just the atmosphere. It's like the track. You want to be there because everyone's there.
Right.
That's how SPAC is, especially when we have the same continuing concert. We have Dave Matthews Band every year. It's a three-day event. Fish comes. It's a three-day event. So whether the music sucks, whether it sounds good, who cares? You got to be there. I'm a Fish fan.
I never
understood Fish. What is the attraction to Fish? I don't get that.
You don't
I think they're terrible.
Days, you stink. You wear tie-dye. I mean,
their fans are obnoxious. They leave the park a mess. It's just like
the generation of the Grateful Dead, the followers of the Grateful Dead had to have somewhere to go.
Yeah.
You know? And so,
all right, guys, let's wrap this up. So, like I said, I think we kind of all agree it was an okay, mediocre movie, nothing special.
It wasn't like, oh my God, best movie ever, but there were good things about it.
There was good things about it. I again, I recommend you watch it regardless of what we're saying here, because it did have some good performances and it told a story. If you don't know Billie Holiday, it's all you have right now to watch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just was a little aimless, but yeah. Everything else was good about the movie. It just, yeah. You know, the storyline's a little bit aimless. It's sort of all over the place.
Right. So when you're watching the Oscars and you see Andra Day won, you know, Best Actress, you'll know why if you watch the film. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot. I'll talk to you guys.
Okay. Supernova. Bye. This is good.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. Talk to you guys.
Like and subscribe. Yes.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.